Hey, this is Russell, and I work at The Video Store, the place that we can go to every week when it's movie night. On days like today, when the store is quiet, I get to chat to my friends about the films and the series that we're loving. All right, let's do it. Let's open up the shop. Did you see that thing yesterday on the TV? Good morning.
Morning, Russell.
Good Tuesday.
How are you guys doing?
All right, dude. How are you?
I'm lekker, man. I'm rested.
Nice.
I dealt with my nephew over the weekend, and he was stiff after playing hockey and stuff all day. I was like, wait until you stiff from sleeping. welcome to The Video Store. Thank you for wandering in. Mm. It is a quiet little Tuesday at the moment. And now that it is nice and quiet, I'm going to have myself a fat chat with my two co-workers here behind the counter. Yeah. We've got ourselves a G-Force here today.
Hello.
How are you doing, Graham?
All right, and yourself?
Yeah, cool, man. Graham is an editor and very much the producer of this show. Mm. We're not working at The Video Store. And then we've got ourselves a little Kolsky Matthews.
Hey.
Who is a digital copywriter. We're not having to work here at The Video Store. And my name is Russell. I am the owner of The Bioscope, which is an independent cinema here in Johannesburg. And today we're having ourselves a fat chat.
Yeah. It's not just Russell.
What do you mean?
It's Rusky Wesky.
Okay.
Well, got a nickname? You get one too.
I'll take it. Anyone who hangs out with me and gets anywhere near my family picks up the fact that they call me Rusky. And so I've got like a few people that call me Rusky just only because they were privy to that naming. All right. Another lovely thing happening is we are going to do another Video Store Presents night.
Finally.
Yeah. Yay. Ba, 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 ba. This is our chance where we debate and talk about the movies that some of us really love in the team that others haven't seen. Mm. And as I said, because I'm the owner of The Bioscope, I have this facility, I have a venue where we can screen the movies that we're talking about here on the podcast. And the moment we heard about the unfortunate passing of David Lynch, my immediate gut reaction was, what can we screen as a Video Store Presents night? We wanted to do a particular film that in many ways represents him the best. It was a very heated debate, which happened over on episode 155, I think.
Something like that.
One of our last episodes. We discussed it, and we eventually settled on The Straight Story, which was chosen as a film because it was perhaps one of the lesser seen David Lynch films.
Yeah.
There are a handful like Lost Highway, Mulholland Drive, Inland Empire, which are very Lynchian, but very much seen by people, especially the kind of people that are interested in David Lynch, where The Straight Story very much embodies his passion for storytelling and this kind of love of humanity. And even though it's not necessarily as dark and as twisted or as weird as some of his other films, we settled on this film, The Straight Story, which is going to be screened on Wednesday.
Cool.
So in the week that this episode is being released at The Bioscope on Wednesday at 8 o'clock, tickets are on sale right now at thebioscope.co.za, but this is our Video Store Presents night. It's a chance for us to meet you, similar to our movie meetup last week for Better Man. This is our chance to meet you. Often at these screenings, we meet folks that don't even know anything about the podcast, but they're coming for the movie. And it's our chance to explain to them more about the podcast. And we have ourselves just a good night.
Yeah.
And it is often these movies where one of us, so in this case, Gad and Perrin very much knew this movie.
Mm.
Have you guys seen The Straight Story?
Never.
No.
I haven't. And it's our chance to like often watch these movies that we haven't seen. So it's a good excuse to get together and watch movies.
Mm.
But it's usually the one that someone knows and loves that's forcing other members of the team to watch. So in this case, it's The Straight Story. As I said, Wednesday, 8 o'clock, tickets at thebioscope.co.za. We've had ourselves some great movies.
Mm.
Yeah. First, shout out to everyone who joined us for the special advanced screening of Better Man.
Yes.
Thank you for coming.
Mm. Yeah. Shout out to Empire Entertainment, who gave us some tickets to give away.
Cool.
And it was lovely to meet those folks and hang out. And it's always a tough one because we haven't seen those movies.
Yes.
And so we gather these folks together, we get them in their cars and they come out to these cinemas.
Yeah.
And then, of course, we don't always know what we're going to watch and whether or not it's going to be any good. But we were very stoked, at least I was very stoked, with Better Man.
Yeah.
This is the Robbie Williams monkey movie, which is the best way to explain it and sell it for those who know about it. And I think it's one of those movies, and we'll talk about it because I want us to get into it, where if you go out and watch it, you'll love it.
Yes.
It's a really good movie.
Yeah.
But I think based on just its sheer wildness as an idea, yeah, I think it is deterring some people.
Mm.
And I don't think it's been doing as well as they wished.
Yeah.
And that is a pity because it is a really good movie.
Mm.
And I think sometimes when ideas bomb, it's because they're novel and audiences don't necessarily want novel.
Yeah.
Exactly. And so we'll get into all of that.
Mm.
I'd love us to talk about Nosferatu,
cool,
which has been screening here at the Bioscope and in cinemas in Johannesburg for a little while. I got a chance to go to an advanced screening of Anora, which is going to be in cinemas, including the Bioscope, from this coming Friday, within the week that this episode is being released. So I really want to talk about Anora because that is a very, very special, very cool movie.
Yeah.
I've watched one or two other things. I found quite a nice fall asleep TV show.
Sure.
What do you guys have that you want to chat about?
I'm rewatching Lost.
Interesting.
Okay. I think you should get on board with that, Graham. But yeah, it's Lost, and also trying to catch up on Severance again.
Yes. Severance is something, now that there is season two,
cool,
I've started it and immediately realized I can't remember a lot from season one.
Yeah.
So I think the advice is go back from the start.
Sure.
And then I also watched Saturday Night.
Okay, this is the biopic about Saturday Night Live.
Yes.
Okay. Which never really came to South Africa because I think it's a very American thing. But that's cool.
Yeah.
All right. Any other big nuggets that you want to chat about?
Nah, probably not.
Okay. All right.
Get into it as we go.
Obviously, another big thing is the fact that the Oscar nominations for this year have been announced.
Yes.
I think there's some interesting inclusions, some interesting snubs.
Yeah.
So we can get into that as we go.
Yeah.
All right. Let's do a little quick entertainment news.
Cool.
We call this "Hey, did you guys see?"
Mm.
Hey, did you guys see that South Africa has a film in the Oscars?
Oh yes.
So a film called The Last Ranger is nominated in the shorts category in live action. So this is not documentary or animation, and it is a South African-made short film.
Cool.
Cindy Lee is the director.
Yeah.
And what you can tell from the trailer is that we are in the world of the bush and rhino conservation.
Okay.
So it involves rhino poaching.
Cool. Hot topic.
Hot topic, but something very important to us here in South Africa. And I just think it's amazing that it's gotten all the way to nomination.
That's cool.
Brilliant.
Every year, the Bioscope will screen the Oscar-nominated short films. They get put together as a package, and there are these distributors that distribute these shorts.
Mm.
And for many years, before we upgraded, this was our only sort of Oscar material we were eligible to screen.
Yes.
And so it was very much a highlight in the Bioscope's calendar around February, March.
Cool.
For people to come and watch the Oscar shorts. Also, what was great is that you often don't get the chance to see them.
Yes.
All in one place because these are perhaps scattered around the internet or not available.
Mm.
And so we took great joy in always screening the Oscar-nominated short films.
Cool.
We always did live action and animation. And this year is no different. I'm chatting to the distributors. Obviously, they have to wait and see who gets nominated and then finish the deals. So it's just a matter of time. But hopefully soon, we will be able to get those tickets on sale. And I think Cindy Lee is available. She lives in South Africa at the very least. So perhaps she could also be on the show.
Yeah, pop in, Cindy Lee.
Yeah.
You want to chat to you?
I think that's worth... I know people that know her, so I don't think it's out of the realm of possibility for us to get her on the show. So let us certainly try. And so this will be a chance for you to watch it, and then let's all root for them. The ceremony for the Oscars, for those needing keeping track, is like very early March.
Okay, cool.
It's like the first Sunday in March.
All right.
So yeah, we'll get into it.
Nice.
Cool.
I have one. Hey, did you guys see that Jude Law is going to be playing Vladimir Putin in the movie?
That is a good casting.
Right?
Is it?
He looks exactly like him. Well, no. Yeah. It's close enough. He's got
the same face shape. Jude Law is gorgeous.
He's like a beautiful Putin.
I'm sure Putin like got wind of this and was like, oh, they're making a movie about me? Fuck them. Oh, Jude Law. Okay, I'm interested.
Sweet.
I'm listening. Do I get to meet him?
I don't want to have that confused boner.
Yeah, that would be a challenging wank. Yeah. Okay, who's making the movie? Do we know?
I have no idea. That's the only thing that I know about it. It's called The Wizard of Kremlin.
Oh, Jesus.
Interesting name. Putin,
right?
Oh, very cool.
Yeah. Did I ever tell you about the time he walked past me in Cannes?
Oh, wow. What the fuck? Oh, wait. Putin or Jude Law?
No. Jude Law. No, we were waiting for a screening. We were back in sort of more backstagey areas that only your market pass could get you in, and a gentleman scuttled past with a hat and glasses, and the press who were outside the perimeter then all started calling his name, and I was like, oh fuck, that was Jude Law, and it was over before I knew it.
Aww.
But it was a pity.
I really want to see Tobey Maguire in public, because have you seen those videos of him seeing paparazzi?
Oh, yeah.
Like these big bulging eyes.
Yeah.
And then whenever someone films the video, they put the Spider-Man music over it that goes, like the warning music. Yeah. Hey, did you guys see that there's a new trailer for Mickey 17?
Yes.
And it's coming out in South Africa on the 7th of March.
Yes.
It's this is a film we've spoken oodles about. So I don't want to necessarily get into the whole story. But it is a film that is very close to my heart because it is based on a book called Mickey 7. And I've said it before. The book is called Mickey 7.
Yeah.
So there's only 7 incarnations. Basically, quick back of the box, this is a guy who is an expendable in the near future, which means that on these colonizing missions, he is a person that they can put through the ringer of testing poisons, testing atmospheres, because they have his body cloned and they can make new ones.
Yeah.
And then the whole premise of the movie is that he discovers, people thought he was dead, and so they made a new clone, but he actually survives. He gets back to the base and realizes there's now 2 of them. Mm. And chaos ensues. But we had a chat with the author of the original book, Mickey 7, and so that episode is banked and will come out before the release of Mickey 17. Yeah. The film has seen multiple release dates, multiple delays, but not because of any problems. Hmm. It was things like the actor's strike and the writer's strike, and the feeling was also so that Warner Brothers could give it more space to breathe and be successful. Very interestingly, in the start of the year, its first release date was in April.
Yeah.
And Sinners, which is their other sort of tentpole of the season, was in this March spot. And then one of the last and final release date changes was those two swapping for some reason.
Because it was originally January, and then it moved to April, and now it's moved back to March.
Yes.
So it's all over
the place. So it now seems sort of final that it's going to be this March. But it's all very exciting. This is old Robert Pattinson. Mm-hmm. But most importantly, this is the filmmaker Bong Joon-ho.
Yeah.
Who is a very particular, very cool South Korean director. And from all accounts, has made this movie to the best of his ability.
Yeah.
It sounds like he really wants things perfect. Mm. And didn't want to compromise. And so it's all of that. It's never felt like it's been a problem.
Yeah.
Or that you hear about test screenings going wrong or whatever. I think it's going to be really good. I'm very excited about it.
Mm-hmm.
Speaking of upcoming movies made by auteur filmmakers, Robert Eggers, who is the filmmaker behind Nosferatu, which we'll talk more about today, has got two movies coming out, one of which I think you've mentioned in a Hey Did You Guys See, which was Werewolf. Did you speak about it?
No, it may maybe Perrin did.
But it also seems like on the slate of what's coming up in his life is a sequel to Labyrinth.
Oh.
That seems to be credible. There's been...
Interesting.
There's been a few mumblings about Labyrinth movies. I very wrongfully brought it up months ago and we discovered that was bullshit.
Yes.
It is quite hard to determine what is actually happening or not.
Yeah.
But this seems, you know, validated by multiple credible sources.
That's a very interesting choice for him.
Yeah. So not a remake.
Yeah.
A sequel to it. Mm. Of course, it's quite difficult with the Goblin King being dead, being being David Bowie. Yeah. But maybe there's something that can be done.
Interesting. I'm
sure I haven't seen Labyrinth. Have you guys seen Labyrinth?
No.
A very long time ago. I'm trying to imagine Robert Eggers dealing with puppets.
Yeah. Because quite a lot of it is is puppetry,
Yeah, it's
right?
a Muppet movie. It was a Jim Henson film.
Yeah.
And also struggling, it's like the same thing with Christopher Nolan's announcements about directing the Odyssey.
Yeah.
Don't know if we've discussed this on the podcast.
Yeah, I know we have, yeah.
Where it's kind of just like, I didn't see him having a Cyclops in his film. You know, which I'm concerned about.
Okay, like the fantasy elements of it.
Exactly, because he always, like with Batman.
He even rooted Batman in some reality. Yeah,
you can't have Mr. Freeze and Nolan's Batman, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So
curious.
Interesting, yeah. All right, should we move on to movies?
Yes.
Let's talk about movies. Okay, we watched Better Man last week.
We sure did.
We all went to Monte Cassino. We almost didn't watch the movie because there was a supposed bomb scare
allegedly
in Monte Cassino, and
so
when
we
got
confirmed,
it was floating around some resident groups. I had a buddy who knew I was coming to Monte Cassino, and he WhatsApped me the fact that there was this bomb scare.
Okay,
and I immediately was like, doesn't seem to be very panicked in here.
Yes,
but thanks, bud. And when we got to the movies, the gates were shut.
Yeah.
We waited for a bit. We thought perhaps it wasn't going to happen. And then I think it was all sort of all clear was given.
Yeah.
And so, but thankfully we got a chance to watch the movie.
They didn't shut down that casino, hey?
No.
It didn't stop for a second. I know someone that's involved in that casino and they were just carrying on as normal.
Yeah.
That's hectic.
Yeah.
But I loved it. Okay. So this is the biopic about Robbie Williams.
Yeah.
The story of Robbie Williams. It is directed by Michael Gracie, who was the person behind The Greatest Showman. Mm. So immediately going into this, you know you're dealing with someone that can and has successfully done a musical movie.
Yeah.
Whether you liked it or not, it certainly nailed the musical genre for me, Greatest Showman. I fucking loved it, but...
People love it.
People love it. And the biggest defining swing, which you once... presented to us in a Hey Did You Guys See, I think, very, very months ago, is the fact that Robbie Williams is replaced by a monkey, a CGI monkey. This is in the sort of style of Planet of the Apes.
Mm.
And we are going to watch this whole movie with a certain level of suspension of disbelief as Robbie Williams is going to be this monkey.
Yes.
This is based on how he kind of sees himself, which I think is a fun angle that he's sort of never been fully evolved as a human.
He's like a performing monkey.
He's a performing monkey. Fame makes monkeys out of all of us. They've used many different angles.
Yeah.
But I think the biggest one is the fact that, you know, Robbie Williams is still very much alive.
Yeah.
And how would you even go about telling the story? Would you try and hire someone who looks like him?
Mm.
Would you get him to act? Can you get him for enough time to act in this movie?
Yeah.
You know, how do you even approach it? And so it made sense that they had this other actor who could be on set that then was able to, you know, do the CGI-ing. And they even had someone else do some of the singing.
Yes.
Yeah. So this guy's name was Adam Tucker.
Okay.
Yeah. And he's always grown up with people telling him he sounds like Robbie Williams.
Oh, right.
And so they used him because I think, and I don't think it's a cop-out, but I think they used him because they needed so much of that person's time.
Mm.
to be recording, right, to be dubbing, to be overlaying, to be isolating his vocals. And if you can get a sound alike,
yeah,
it's, right, it's easier than the time of Robbie Williams. Every hour of that guy's life is very valuable.
Also, Robbie Williams just being older now, he's got to be in like his 50s, I would think.
Yeah.
His voice isn't going to sound the way it did in the 80s.
Exactly.
You know, you need someone that sounds like he did when he was still in Take That.
Yeah. And it was a very interesting movie. It's done with the lens, kind of literally and figuratively, of this kind of art house, quite gritty film. It was very grainy. So it had this beautiful kind of texture to it. And then it was very interesting seeing the monkey character sort of, you know, rendered in the same texture.
Like cinematic space.
In
is
the
like
cinematic texture.
Working class London.
Yeah.
Or England, you know.
And of course, you know, we'll talk about it, but it is very much an exploration of his mental health, which is something we've always spoken about.
Yeah.
Is that is the entry point to almost anything, whether it's a docuseries or a biopic these days, is like the focus is on their mental health.
Yeah.
And I think we just get this very vulnerable, very beautiful, very honest story about how fucked up he was.
Yeah.
Famously, but we see behind the curtain even more, you know?
Yeah, and it just feels even more authentic because they've used this device of this monkey.
Yeah.
And the expressions that they can get of the monkey.
And it works, eh?
And, yeah, and I think that's the most important part. And I said it right at the start of the episode. If you are able to see this movie, you will like it.
Yeah.
You just got to either go out to the cinema, or I think what we were saying is that this will be a great streaming movie. Because when it's accessible and right there, people will go like, oh, it's this one. Let's give it a try. Yeah. And they actually will like it.
100%. They'll be like, oh, I wish I saw this in the cinema.
Yeah.
Maybe.
Yeah. I mean, the cinema aspect of it is great, you know, to hear the noise and feel the energy of this musical. I was with it all the way. I very quickly put up the, you know, suspension of disbelief. And
it took seconds.
It took seconds and I was there. I mean, this cute little monkey in the bath.
Oh my God, when he's, what's the first song that he sings? I just want to feel. Yeah. Real love. You're like, oh my God, this poor little child. This poor little baby chimpanzee. Right.
Yeah, and when he's in the bath with his gran and he's like, I don't want to be a nobody.
Right.
It's like, fuck, he knows like how to push it.
Right.
But it was fun and it was funny. And even right at the end, it had such a nice like wrap up. Mm. And I love a movie that can do that.
Yeah,
that can,
also.
That can give you that last little da-da at the end. And you just fucking feel it. And you just leave it going like, yes.
Yeah, like 2024 was very much a year of musicals in hindsight. Like
with
Joker, Folie à Deux. And our biggest complaint with that was that it was unimaginative because you're supposed to be inside the Joker's head. And when you look at how much opportunity is taken in this,
yes,
to use digital cameras and to use novel transitions from the real into the unreal, into a musical number, out of a music, it's seamless.
Yes.
But it's also heightened dramatically.
Yeah.
Right? And then also with Wicked, our complaint with Wicked, as Brett said, the choreographer, he was saying to the choreographer, not everything has to be gay, right? The choreography is like just incessantly gay and Wicked and nonstop and high energy.
Right.
And it's not dynamic like that. And this, you watch that Regent Street number and you're just like, your breath is taken. I'm pretty sure that must be one of the best musical numbers. And also like with the pan up to like 500 real in-camera dancers at the end.
Yeah.
It's so kind of like, it feels like you're looking at classic Hollywood again, and it feels as epic and large, and I'm sure it's one of the best musical numbers we've seen ever.
Yeah, so there's a big number on Regent Street in London, and especially around Christmas time, a lot of London puts up these beautiful Christmas lights, and it's a very classic shopping street. It's a very famous street. And just to give you an idea of timing and when this movie was made, they were due to shoot the Regent Street and they'd locked it off, which was like almost unheard of.
And it also took them like a fair amount of time, like a year and a half to achieve that, right?
It was crazy to get this locked off. I think Tom tells the majority of the story in our episode with him. Tom from Short Straw is also a cinematographer, has worked on one or two occasions with Michael Gracie, and he told the story. Regent Street was all lined up. It was very expensive just to get the permits to lock the street off in London. And then the Queen goes and dies.
Oh, geez.
And then they have to observe it.
Well, they couldn't. I think they were going to do queen funeral processions around the time of this shooting.
Yes. Like when they were transporting her body down from Scotland, they were going to probably go through.
They would definitely pass through Regent Street. Yeah. So that interrupted and messed with their filming schedule.
Jeez.
And of course, you can't like fight that.
And they're like, they tell the story in a behind-the-scenes documentary and they pretty much lost all of that money.
They lost millions of pounds as a result of the Queen dying.
Good Lord.
But they then ended up, you know, still being able to film it. And they and of course, as you said, it pulled off. The sequence was incredible. Mm. And Gracie was able to show Tom, this was at the beginning of last year, when we played Kirstenbosch as a band, Tom was able to join us on stage, which was great because Tom was in town. And he had just finished working on the set with Michael Gracie.
Okay.
And Tom was like, I saw that footage of Regent Street and it looks fucking amazing. And so it was very exciting. And so this is the thing, is that people just need to go and watch this fucking movie. I, you know, he had disappeared from the public light. This is Robbie Williams. But we forget how fucking famous he was and how huge it was.
At least in Europe.
Certainly.
Europe in particular.
Certainly in Europe. And a Netflix series came out, which certainly helped bring him back to all of our attention and reminded us how crazy this guy's life was and what he had achieved. And I think that was the introduction to America through this Netflix series to say, and he never made it in America.
Yeah.
But he lives there now, but this is the introduction to who he is. Mm. And I think it was perhaps well-timed ahead of the movie, but it just wasn't enough.
Yeah. Mm.
And when this movie was now coming out, a lot of the internet was like, who the fuck is Robbie Williams? And you're like, yeah, we know. He never made it there. And I don't think that Netflix show was enough, but it's a great Netflix show as well. So the two going together help you realize just how successful he was, how troubled he was. But I personally remember watching Live at Nebworth and thinking, this cocky motherfucker is so awesome. Do you know what I mean? Like, he pulls it off and you think he is a god. And it's so amazing now to watch this film where you can see just before and after and during what was, at least in Robbie's attempt to retell, was going through his head. And he was fucked. He was fucked up.
Yeah.
He like wasn't in a good place. Mm. And it's so strange because he wanted the fame but then couldn't handle it.
Yeah. Mm.
It was a very interesting dynamic.
Yeah.
He sort of really wanted it but couldn't take it.
Yeah. Well, I think that's one of the things that kind of sets this apart from other biopics, musical biopics in particular. And this does kind of hit all the clichés of the rise and the fall and the recovery sort of story. It does all of those things. But it sets itself apart in a couple of ways, one of them obviously being the monkey.
Yeah.
But the other thing that sets it apart is so many films like this is something that bothered me a few times in A Complete Unknown, is there's always the scenes, and there's like multiple scenes, where there'll be characters just like gawking at the brilliance of the artist on display. They're just sort of like wide-eyed and like, wow, look at how incredible this person is.
Like, you're like a genius.
Exactly, and like we're meant to like be caught up in that, but this film never ever does that with Robbie Williams.
If anything, he's underestimated throughout.
It's more makes it clear how much, rather than being driven by talent, he's driven by insecurity.
Yeah,
right.
And that's something that like a lot of these movies just aren't honest enough to display.
Yeah,
right.
Whereas this movie has that honesty in it to be like, this guy, like, it's not that he isn't talented; he's clearly very talented.
Yeah,
but he like carried himself through just with his cockiness and his like overconfidence,
like his audacity.
Yes,
that's what it is.
Exactly.
Yeah,
I think that's something that like gives this film a little bit of something.
Mm, I love that. That's a great.
We forget that like these films about these famous historical figures are like, especially Bob Dylan.
Yeah,
it's just like framed in this complete reverence behind the lens.
Yes,
and that agenda is carrying the storytelling through.
Yes.
But this like just completely removes that.
Yeah, exactly. Like the first scene where we see him audition for someone, there in any other film, it would have been a moment where like the person auditioning was like, at first they're not paying attention. All of a sudden, like, oh my god, I've discovered like this, the greatest person in the world. But he gets rejected.
Yes.
And then it's just his cockiness that like gets the hook. Yeah. That like that's what gets the hook in this guy.
It was like the wink.
Yeah, exactly. Know? It's not like his talent, even if he is talented. But it's that like confidence.
And maybe it was because he was involved in the making of it so intently.
Yeah.
as opposed to just complete unknown, where it was like it got the blessing at the end.
Yes.
From Dylan.
Geez, every time we talk about music biopics, I'd like just remember how much I hate Bohemian Rhapsody. Sorry. It's like a sort of thing.
What do you hate about it?
There was an interview with Sacha Baron Cohen. He was talking about when he was going to play Freddie Mercury in the first iterations of it.
Yeah.
And he was saying that he was talking to, and the problem is that Brian May and Roger Taylor were involved.
Yeah.
Right? They have like a certain agenda with that story.
There's like a protectiveness of the brand image.
Yeah, you know? Of Queen.
Yeah.
Not of Freddie Mercury, of Queen.
Exactly.
Right? Yeah. And they said to him, something brilliant happens halfway through the story. And Sacha Baron Cohen was like, what? And they're like, Freddie dies. And they're like, what happens for the rest of the story? And it's like, no, it's about Queen's like consequent success and ability to carry on.
And he was like, fuck that. Yeah. The story of Queen is Freddie Mercury.
Yeah. 100%.
Yeah, and that's
why you guys are secondary to Freddie.
He was going to be Freddie Mercury.
Yeah.
You know?
That wasn't clear.
But so it's like either you have the artists in the future with the hindsight, like revering too much, right? Or you have the artists involved.
Yeah.
And then if it's not the person involved, there's this kind of agenda that carries into the storytelling. Yeah. So it's like, it's so rare to find something that sidesteps those things.
Exactly.
One example of where it all goes horribly wrong is the Amy Winehouse biopic.
Oh, I've heard this, yeah.
Which just lacks heart, lacks authenticity, lacks fucking everything.
Jeez.
Shame. And you can see the actress is trying real hard.
Mm.
So it's certainly not on her part. Right. But it was one of those like, and it ends. And you're like, duh, fuck.
Jeepers.
No, it was just like the dad was involved and it was trying, he was obviously trying to protect his legacy in the story. It was very clumsy and it also just felt too soon.
Okay.
Even though Amy Winehouse had passed away a long time ago.
Like you guys are trying to capitalize on this person's death.
It's like, this just feels too soon.
I think I also in Better Man, I think despite the fact that it's a jukebox musical, it feels less like a jukebox musical than Greatest Showman. Like, despite the fact that Greatest Showman songs were written exclusively for it, it feels like a series of pop songs.
Right.
Like, the songs very rarely, like, drive the story or inform us about the characters.
Yes, yes.
Whereas in this, you kind of, this is the movie going, okay, Robbie Williams has got, like, a little bit more going on than you would ordinarily give him credit for.
Absolutely. Yeah.
You know, like, his songs have that little bit more depth than you'd expect.
Exactly.
And they use them really well in this film to, like, drive the character.
Absolutely.
You know, like, surprisingly well.
Yeah. I was disappointed that they didn't use tripping, because that's how I came to Robbie Williams in 2005.
Which is tripping?
I know it's sooner, there's gonna be violence.
Okay.
I remember that song.
That's it's like it's about getting high. I was like, dude, it's right there. Low-hanging fruit, take it.
Yeah, I forgot about that. You forget how many like great songs he had.
Yeah.
Exactly.
And shout out to Vash, who's been on the store before.
Yes.
He's come to visit. Who joins us for a lot of the movie premieres.
Mm.
And he's young. He's like in his early 20s. And he's like, I don't know how I'm going to feel about this movie because I don't know any Robbie Williams songs. And I was like, trust me, bro. You're going to recognize them when they play. Yeah. And then when these big songs came up, I was like, yeah, you remember this? He's like, nope. And I'm like, ah,
but
fuck.
But I think the thing is it works even if you don't know the songs. I don't think you need to know the songs.
It's like a good musical in that way. The songs are all motivated by the story.
Yeah.
But yeah, speaking of other people who were there, one of our listeners and friends, Alistair Anderson, was there at the screening with us, and he said he's going to pop in.
Cool.
To return Better Man, so it might be interesting to to hear what he has to say. I can see him coming up. Here he is.
Hi, I'm Alistair, and I'm returning Better Man. What a superbly made film! Incredibly entertaining. Very creative from the part of Michael Gracie, the director. He really has fun with it. He uses the animated part of Robbie Williams' character, him being a monkey, to create ridiculous dance scenes, which actually reference things that happened in Robbie Williams' career and his life when he was able to take that, the costumes they wore, music videos, and so on. They are very good at pinpointing things that people who know about Take That or Robbie Williams and other 90s British artists like All Saints is all my wheelhouse to the maximum. I'm obsessed with the 90s UK pop stuff. Would recognize. So that's what's so cool. I thought it was really, really good. I thought it's great that Robbie Williams has a big role in the movie that he was playing himself. But then there's also another guy that plays part of it. And I think he does some of the songs. That's real commitment considering that Williams has been on a massive world tour where he just re-released all his stuff after 25 years. This is about 2023-ish. He re-recorded songs and now he's on the tour again, and he's just been in South Africa and he is playing in Joburg and Cape Town. I thought it was a phenomenally made movie. A lot of fun. They're not afraid to poke jest at things. He's very human in it. He's getting a bit better at this. I thought it was so much better than the Netflix documentary that he did, where it was a little bit self, whatever you want to call it. It's just self-infatuation, flagellation. No, I thought this was a bit more human and real, and it's a better way of telling his story, because ultimately that's what he was the Joker in this pop music scene. Had a hell of a lot of fun watching it. And I hope they do similar things like this, except you don't want them to necessarily make every pop star into an animal or creature. It's just, this is such a unique and cool idea. I really wonder where it came from. So interesting that the director did something like The Greatest Showman went and did this next. Yeah, I can't wait to see what else these studios create, but this is the kind of movie that we needed in film right now, even if the Americans don't get it, and apparently not that much of the world either. I think it's something that will do very well in streaming. Yeah, just what a really cool movie. And flip, it's just, it references so much stuff, even like Nebworth and the like, and the drug scenes. Flip, I haven't seen stuff like that since Trainspotting. Thanks so much, Bice. Go.
Cool. Nice right. to always hear what everyone else has
exactly,
to say.
Exactly, yeah.
And also just know, guys, that you can also always return stuff here to the video store. You can send us a voice note through Instagram, or you can see our email address.
Yes.
So there's lots of different ways that you can send us a voice note.
Cool.
And yeah, we love to get your returns.
Mm.
Okay, another film that we must chat about is Nosferatu.
Oh, right. I haven't seen it yet. So.
Oh, Graham. Okay, let's make a plan. So I want to watch it again here, because I was sitting right in the front. Because the audience was like, at the Bioscope, was crowding the doors, waiting for them to open.
Oh, right.
Which I'd never seen before.
And then I was cool, like, when you told me that was happening.
Everyone was crowding the right door. Mm. And as soon as they opened, I like dashed to the left door. But they were still like going down the rows of seats faster than me. I was like, fuck. Yeah. So I couldn't sit in the middle. So I sat in the front. So my neck was a bit sore throughout it. But yeah, your cinema did good.
Thank you. Did very good. It. We've only had sold out screenings.
Yeah, I was actually thinking about coming on Sunday, but then I checked and I was like, oh, it's sold out.
Yeah. It's delightful. And it's just so great that something like this comes along for a cinema like the Bioscope. And for those who've been listening every week, you've heard us talk about the fact that it at one point wasn't going to come.
Yeah.
And then the cards shifted in particular ways, and over the holidays it was worked out and it was greenlit.
Yeah.
And I was very quick to go, all right, guys, here we go. Because I was getting so many emails and messages over that Christmas, New Year's, you know, that like black hole, you know, that like weird time between Christmas and New Year's.
Yes.
Where you don't know what day it is.
Yeah.
But almost every day there were these messages from people saying, are you going to screen it? Would you consider screening it? And have you heard about this movie? I'm like, I fucking know this movie, but it should be here. And then I mailed all of them back to be like, buy your tickets, go. And so we're very proud to be able to present it. Tell me what you think of it, Cole.
Well, expectations were super high.
Okay.
And also that doesn't happen very often, where you get like that little, I don't know, electric feeling of excitement going into movies like you did when you were younger. I thrive on that. And I miss it so much. So I had that going into this. And it starts off. Also, my friend Hendrik, who's like a shameless queer. I wasn't going to say the other word, but we say the other word to each other because we're that derogatory. Watching movies with him is so awkward, because if there's a sex thing involved, Hendrik doesn't shut up. It's so funny. Like at the start, she's, and I don't think it's too much of a spoiler because it's in the trailer.
Right.
She's, as a teenager, she is bewitched by this angel, right? Which is Nosferatu. You figure out it's Orlok. And she's taken out into the garden, or we assume she's led by this thing.
Yeah.
And then in the garden, she starts making little noises.
Yeah.
And then next two seats down from me, I hear Hendrik go, Miss Ma'am. So also, like, I was with a row of people who were quite vocal during the movie, and yeah. there were a few laughs, which was hilarious. Like, nice. Claudia as well. Like, Jesus Christ, you know, when she gets surprised. And the thing that it does, sorry, yeah?
I think that's the importance of this movie, and that's why I knew it would be a good cinema movie.
Yes.
It's not only just to see the art on the big screen and to see this big, you know, cinematic piece of visual art.
Yeah.
But it's to experience it with other people.
Absolutely. And that was, it was, now that you mentioned that, it makes me think of when I watched Murnau's Nosferatu in Scotland at the Grosvenor.
Right. Yeah.
Because watching that with the cinema full of people was like way better than watching it on YouTube for free on my laptop.
Right.
Because everyone was laughing their tits off when Orlok was carrying his coffins into town, like, you know, it was just like, it's aged terribly, but it was still a fun cinema experience. And the same thing happens here, where you realize that A, it's a horror film that understands the power of dread, which I feel like Eggers always does well in his films. Okay. There's like this persistent kind of dread.
Right.
And it's, you feel like there's a predator, right? There's a monster. And the cool thing about Orlok is he ostensibly acts like a human and he is a count, so that's believable. But then you feel like this is a grotesque animal.
Right.
And I feel like Dracula's never really had that treatment.
Okay.
You know, Herzog did the sympathetic, forlorn, like, like Dracula who looks tired because he can't die. And then you get the goofy Orlok and then you get the Bela Lugosi.
Right.
You know? So it's like this brilliantly gross. Because I think that this director finds the horror in the grotesque.
Okay.
It's kind of like things that either you that's taboo.
Yes.
Like, you don't want to see a witch grinding up a baby in the witch, you know?
Yeah.
Or
this is the this is the other movie that Robert Eggers made, The Witch.
Or like Robert Pattinson having sex with the mermaid in The Lighthouse.
Oh yeah.
Right. It's like all this taboo cross species grotesque stuff. And there's you'll note when you see it when like you see the vampire sucking the blood, is like it makes you feel sick to your stomach.
Right.
And it does that well. But then the fucking jump scares, I can't tell you how good they are, because it's edited. It's like sound edited, it's film edited. And you're just watching this horror persist through, and this, like, we're waiting for the jump scare, or you don't know that it's going to come. And when it comes, it still gets you. Like, fuck, it got me.
It's gotten a lot of the Craft Oscar nominations, right?
Yes.
I think it's in, we'll just double check its nominations, but it's like the wardrobe makeup kind of set design type categories. Cool. I think it's worth mentioning, sorry, just to jump back to Better Man, that unfortunately it didn't get many, but the one it did get was visual effects, which it makes sense that it very much deserves. Here Nosferatu is getting a lot of the more crafty stuff.
So it's three Oscars. It's nominated for Best Makeup and Hairstyling, Best Production Design, and Best Cinematography, which are all so damn well deserved.
Okay, cool.
And I think the performances across the board are incredible. So Perrin and I were having a WhatsApp argument about, he was like,
P-Dog didn't really dig it.
Yeah, he said the Orlok wasn't scary.
Okay.
Because he doesn't look like a vampire,
I suppose. He said he had a weird South African accent.
No, he definitely does. It's because of the R's,
right?
Probably.
Anybody who rolls their R's
is a certain type of person in South Africa. But I felt like Aid was a believable Orlok in terms of being like this version of this old history that is bygone. Like, it's very well researched.
Have any of you guys read Dracula?
Yeah.
Okay. I've since gone out and bought.
Yes.
I realized Exclusive Books has got a little wing, which is like gifting books. Have you ever seen that as a category?
No.
Which is like a beautifully made book.
Right.
Oh. Like, it's more about its production than anything else.
Cool,
just in the classic section,
but
it's done in this like beautiful hardbound book.
It's about looking good on a shelf.
It's about looking good on a shelf, very much so, yeah. And I bought the Dracula one because it just looks fucking awesome and I can't wait to read it. But what did you get from the book? Because you were saying the other day that it's a really good book to read.
It is a fun book to read. I think its pacing is a bit off, because it's like a whole bunch of diary entries and that can become a bit repetitive. And it's also about the woman, Mina, and I can't remember the other one's name, Emily Corrin and Lily Rose Depp in the film.
Right.
It's about them exchanging notes and living together and experiencing the horrors, and her trying to write about missing Jonathan because he's gone missing and all this stuff. But it's it does the same thing that the book does well in terms of this threat that's coming. Okay. They show Orlok more in the film, and they involve Orlok more as like a love triangle between Jonathan Harker, her husband, who's pretty boy, what's his name?
Nicholas Holt.
Oh, right. Lily Rose Depp, and then Orlok.
Okay.
And that's very much treated as a love triangle where poor Jonathan Harker, fuck. That guy got the short end of the stick, dude. He tries. He's such a good guy.
Mm.
But he's not fucking Orlok, you know?
Doesn't possess her the same way.
Yeah, exactly. Poor dude. But I feel like it gets the period side of it well. It feels like a period movie in some instances, but dressed up as a horror.
Right.
So it's like this taboo gothic romance.
Yeah, Robert Eggers made some comment like, I don't want to ever have to film a cell phone. He's like not interested in making any movie set in the modern era. He's like, that would just kill me. He said something, that was the quote, was something like, I don't want to ever have to film a cell phone.
Yeah.
Okay, I'm glad that you dug it. I must say, it's just been such a treat to have it here. We're going to keep screening it as much as we can. But as we've said in all our communication with the Bioscope, like, there are just so many other films.
Yeah.
Like Anora, which I'd love to get into.
Okay.
Anora is another one of the Oscar contenders. It is up there for best film.
Yeah.
Sean Baker, who's the filmmaker, I think is certainly in the running for writing.
Best director as well.
Best director.
Film editing, original editing, screenplay.
Supporting actor.
Yeah.
Yoda Borisov.
Yeah. Yeah. Who was so lovely. Cool.
He was great.
And Mikey Madison for lead actress.
So it tells the story of a young stripper who's working in New York. She's got that real like New Yorker,
Long Island accent.
Life is tough. She's very much working class in that sense, and is asked to look after a young, very wealthy Russian kid in the strip club. They fall in love. He is the son, clearly, of an oligarch, and has got oodles of money. He proceeds to pay for more nights with her. He then proceeds to pay for a week. And eventually they are going to get married. They get married in a crazy weekend in Vegas. And very soon after, once the word gets to his parents in Russia, this is very much a problem that their son has married a prostitute in their eyes. And chaos ensues as the people who look after him have to both get this annulled and track them down and keep the son safe. And so it starts as this kind of romance. It very much becomes this sort of strange situation comedy almost. But it has an incredible depth, incredible layer. It is a lovely comment on the American dream and what it is to, you know, live that. It's quite sad in many ways. It's an incredible film, and it won the Palme d'Or, which is the big celebrated film at Cannes last year. It was meant to be screened at the end of November, when it then screened in other cinemas around the world.
Okay.
But in South Africa, it got pushed to now, and so it is starting now on the 31st of Jan.
Cool.
And it's a Bioscope movie in many ways, just because it is this like crazy, quite gritty, quite hardcore story.
Mm.
It's certainly not rose-tinted and silly. If anything, as I said, it's quite haunting and actually quite sad in many ways. Yeah. But it's still fun, and so it's still a great roller coaster of a movie, and you're kind of there for it the whole time.
Yeah.
When you say it's not rose-tinted, it definitely isn't in like the last two-thirds of the movie. But it does so well at making you think it's going to be a rose-tinted movie at the start.
Yes.
Where
yes.
you believe in the love, you believe in the euphoria.
Yeah.
And then, it takes a tonal shift. And you're like, fuck, you know?
Yeah.
It's like, it does that so well and it doesn't feel like mishandled, right? Mm-hmm. It feels like super intentional.
Yeah.
But then I think like the interesting thing that I could hear you like kind of talking about as well is like the compassion it has for her as a character, because the parents very much see her as a prostitute, and you can see how that word stings her.
Mm-hmm.
But the film kind of never imposes that kind of moral lens on her. It's kind of just like, she's a sex worker. She's a working class woman. she's doing what she's doing to get by, like everyone else. You know, there's no judgment there.
Yeah.
Which is, I feel like, sure, other films have done it before, yes. But it's just like, it's interesting to point out when the parents are coming and being like, you're being reduced to this prostitute yes. that can't have this life. You're a poor person. Yeah. You're not going to be a rich yeah, oligarch.
And it doesn't glamorize her as sort of being overly sexy and this thing mm-hmm. is so sexy. When she performs her acts as a stripper, it's not sexy. There's like this, I don't know whether you guys have had much experience in strip clubs. I've gone once or twice a very long time ago.
Same.
And the moment you walk in, you're like,
yeah.
It's like, fuck, this is not sexy. There's nothing sexy about this. No. And so immediately it knows that that is not something to glamorize yeah. And make sexy. But also the same as this character, this guy who's nominated for Best Supporting Actor, he plays one of the heavies, one of the bodyguards that has to come in and you know, make sure that this marriage can get annulled. So you've got to, he ends up having to sort of restrain Honora.
Yeah.
And it's not because he's an evil guy, it's just because she's so wild.
Yeah.
And in the scene, they have to restrain her, but she is so effective at fighting back that he ends up having to kind of like hold her down. So in her head, she's being tied up, but in his head, he's like, I just have to like hold you, otherwise you're going to like do this crazy shit. And you realize that he's actually this lovely dude, and you kind of feel for him throughout the movie, and you kind of root for him.
Yeah.
And so it's also playing on that, you know, misconception that all the bald Russian guys in these movies with the name what is his name?
Well, the actor's name is Yura.
But what is his character's name? Igor. It's like a real you know, purposefully purposefully chosen as a name to be the most quintessential, you know, Russian mafia name.
Yeah.
But he's not that, and there's something so delightful about that. So the movie constantly breaks those misconceptions.
Yeah.
And also the character arc of the Russian boy, the little, the young man. That
Ivan.
Ivan also is great. And how you realize how fucking useless he is.
Yes.
Yeah.
He's just such a fucking moron of a dude.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That also only gets like
it's
revealed.
Like a brat. Yeah. And but, also you don't, you but he's don't got no think
backbone
that in the beginning.
And he's got no gumption and he can't be there for her. It's lovely to see how these characters change in time over the course of the movie.
Yeah, and that also carries through to the very, very end.
Yeah.
I'm not going to give away any spoilers, but it had like my reference point for this in terms of like fiction is Lord of the Flies. We've spoken about this before.
Okay.
When you read that final page and all of a sudden the entire film takes on a new meaning.
Yeah.
And that very much happens with Honora as well.
Interesting. I don't think you were a part of the discussion. I read Lord of the Flies now in December for the first time ever.
Oh, what? No, I don't think I was in that discussion. Cool.
Yeah, I've been going on a mission for those who've been following over the weeks of me trying to read the books I should have read.
Yes.
And like, as I said, I've bought Dracula. That's that's next. What do you, sorry, quickly just to help me, what did you get from the end of Lord of the Flies?
Oh, so the entire island situation with the boys is very much like a tribal thing. We get like, it feels very much like a distraction from the real issue, right? Where you get into the situation of these children having to survive by hunting and surviving. And it becomes like this, I don't know, I don't want to say the modern reference point is Bear Grylls, but it's very much not that.
Yeah.
But then in the final beat, when the adults arrive on the island, it's like the final page. I think
the last couple pages. Yeah,
there's like, there's something that's going to happen between two main characters, like a death. There's murder that's going to happen or something. Like one of the boys is going to kill another one, and it's interrupted by people arriving on the island and coming to rescue them. And as soon as the children see the adults, they just break down in tears. And then you're just like, oh, fuck, that's what the story has been about. It's the loss of childhood, and these are children. I thought, I didn't see them as kids the entire way through the book. Like, it's making you see a version of children, but it's fictional. It's not real. But then the book, like, at the end, suddenly just roots it into this, like...
Yeah, the way it's written there, the way that... It's almost like that spell is broken.
Yes.
And he's like a child again.
Yes.
The main, I can't remember the main character's name.
And then
the way it describes him like just breaking down entirely is like, whoa.
Yeah, and then you feel like, did I see like imagination throughout this entire book? Because there's no ways any of this could have been real. Or, you know, So it's like an interesting exercise.
I loved reading Lord of the Flies.
It's great. It's an
incredible book.
It was a really great book. And then I was very excited. I think I mentioned it in another episode that I don't think you were a part of, Cole. In the upcoming or in development films of Luca Guadagnino is Lord of the Flies.
No ways.
Yeah, so I mean, it'll probably be in years to come.
Yeah.
But it's one of those classic books.
Oh, that must be a difficult production.
Gosh, yeah, it's really tough.
It could be interesting. All right. I watched another movie, which I thought was kind of interesting.
Yeah.
It's a very much a Netflix show that I thought was a show, and then it didn't break to the next episode, and then I realized it was a film. It was called Don't Die, and it is about the man who wants to live forever.
Okay.
It's an interesting thing to have watched. Here's a guy who's putting up his hand. He's a wealthy tech guy who now, for many years, wasn't looking after his body and his health, then did, and is now using himself as a guinea pig to try and like almost de-age himself.
Right.
It really only comes with his time and energy and money that he has. But he certainly got the world's attention. His name is Brian Johnson. And it's an interesting thing. It's worth watching because he's crazy and he lives this kind of completely ridiculous life, taking hundreds of pills a day, you know, doing all this kind of weird experiments on himself, some of which, you know, he has to go to like South America for or like Central America because they, you know, this kind of thing is outlawed in the States. But I think it's interesting if someone goes very clearly, I'm putting up my hand to do this.
Right.
I'll be the guinea pig on this and hopefully we'll learn some stuff from it as to how we need to look after ourselves, what experiments work and don't work.
Right.
He's a kind of a creepy looking dude because he's now in his 50s.
I saw a whole Reddit post about this.
But yeah, he sort of has gotten the world's attention just because he is successful in many ways in slowing down his aging.
Yeah.
And it's just an interesting study. So yeah, it's called Don't Die. It's on Netflix.
He was in the news recently, sorry.
Oh yeah, no, go for it.
That one of the drugs he was taking, him and his team have stopped taking. It's called Rapamycin is a drug originally used as immunosuppressant to prevent organ transplant rejection and as a treatment for some cancers and rare diseases. And he's just taking this, which is nuts.
As you do.
Unfortunately, it turns out that it's not only actually aging him, it also has a series of side effects, which include intermittent skin, soft tissue infections, lipid abnormalities, glucose elevations, and increased resting heart rate. So he stopped taking that drug.
My Lord.
Yeah, throughout the film, he does look dramatically different as his hair is longer and shorter. And even though it is over a period of time, I think he's doing these things to like grow his hair. So like sometimes he's got like a big head of hair, sometimes he doesn't. But there are some times where like his skin looks fucked. So I don't know whether it's because of that thing.
Weird.
But it's like, hey man, if you want to be that guy, like that's cool. We don't all have to do it, but
why are all these rich people fucking insane?
Yeah.
Like all of them.
Yeah.
Musk is insane and a Nazi. Zuckerberg's insane. David Zaslav is insane. They're all fucking lunatics.
I think money corrupts you, dude.
I think old Elon is just so wildly spectrumed that I don't even think in his head he was like,
oh no, I think he knew exactly what he was doing. 100%
he knew what he was
doing. I think he was just so socially awkward he like didn't know what to do with his hands.
But he did it twice.
Sure.
Yeah.
I think he was like trying to maybe dab because is that what the youth do?
No, there's a side-by-side comparison I've seen of a Nazi rally where it's a Roman salute, hand in your chest, Seagull.
Yeah,
it's like a very deliberate thing, and it's kind of just like, come on, don't be a fucking idiot, you're a grown man, we know what these things mean socially and you should know this as well.
The problem is he's been filthy rich his entire life and he's been surrounded by yes men.
Oh yeah.
So no one's ever said no to him.
Also
ever.
He just told Germans that they should stop feeling so bad about the Holocaust. So I don't doubt it.
I hope he trips and falls in a toilet.
Wild.
And then Donald Trump comes along to help him and he also trips and falls in a toilet. And then they're both stuck there for like 2 or 3 days. They'll be fine. They have water, so they'll live.
But
in that time, because they're missing and no one knows where they are, the world will heal.
Yeah, exactly. That's all it will take.
Yeah.
It's just 3 days without them.
Any other good TV? Should we get onto TV for a bit?
Sure.
What have we been enjoying?
Nothing.
We must get Graham into series. Graham doesn't watch enough series.
No, well, I watch very few shows.
This is myself and my wife. Stumbled across
my wife.
We stumbled across an older TV show called Perception.
Okay.
Which is on Disney Plus. It is a lovely, rather simple fall asleep show in the sense that it doesn't have to hold dramatic attention. You don't have to pay too much attention. It's the complete opposite of Severance, where you are very much questioning what the fuck's going on.
Right.
And almost need to watch season one all again in order to understand season two. I love Severance, by the way. Sorry, just to speak on that very quickly. Mm-hmm. And season two has started on Apple TV, but we need a recap. But Perception, I thought it'd be interesting to talk about for a few reasons. The one is that it stars Eric McCormack, who we all know as Will from Will and Grace.
Okay.
It is a old show, so it's some parts of it sort of date itself. So it's certainly not a new show, but he plays like a neuroscience brain professor.
I was wondering where that was going.
He's a brain person. Yeah. He's just a professor at a university.
Right.
But understands how brains work and lectures on that.
Okay.
But gets called in to help solve crimes.
Ah.
So it's one of those like slightly preposterous TV shows.
Okay.
But what's nice and why I say it's easy is it kind of resolves itself every episode. So it's simple in that sense.
Okay.
But he is super smart and, you know, a very like savanty kind of smart guy, so smart that he is a schizophrenic. He is a paranoid schizophrenic. So you then get a little bit of a Beautiful Mind scenario.
Oh, right.
Have you seen the movie A Beautiful Mind with Russell Crowe? Yeah. Where he's a very smart mathematician, and then you realize halfway through the movie that one or two of the characters that he talks to are not real.
Yeah.
And this TV show is very similar, where characters appear in his brain as figments of his imagination that help him solve the crimes.
Right.
So it's all rather silly. It's a little bit, it's one of those preposterous TV shows. There's there's that other one that we watched where he was the coroner, and it was the Australian show.
Okay.
But he also sort of gets involved in the solvings. It's like those dudes would never solve crimes.
Yes.
Like the police would never let them work together. It's like you have no jurisdiction or authority to be in this crime scene, but you're here because you're smart.
Yes.
And but yeah, good old Eric McCormack.
Okay.
I thought it would be relevant to talk about this because one of the books I also read over the December holidays is the new Malcolm Gladwell.
Okay.
He is the New York Times journalist that's written a lot of important books, one of which was The Turning Point many years ago, which was all about how epidemics happen, but more how these incredible moments happen in history that sort of turn and make crazes and make things popular and how things, you know, came to be popular. He's now written a book called The Revenge of the Turning Point, which is how epidemics spread. And it's a continuation of this idea about how people can manipulate the public opinion on things. So a lot of it is about COVID and what we've learned from COVID and how these things spread. But why I'm bringing this all up is because there is an incredible chapter about how even in the modern era, building up to how gay folks were able to get married in America, shortly before that happened, it didn't look like that legislation could ever happen.
Right.
And activists were saying we're so far away from making this possible, where the public opinion would be swayed on whether or not gay folks can get married. But in this chapter, he credits the incredible success of the TV show Will and Grace and how that was so much more instrumental than we think of changing the public's opinion and shifting the dial in society on their opinion on gay.
Yes, sure.
Marriage, but also just gay folks in general. Okay. We've spoken a bit about it on the video store about things like the representation of women and how there's that metric.
Mm.
I think you raised it or Perrin raised it. There's a name given to measuring a film, how it represents women and certain...
Oh, it's the Bechdel test.
The Bechdel test, yeah. So very similarly, there were these movies that were addressing homosexuality and dealing with it, but they were often demonizing it, or it was often raised in a particular way, or
right.
It was a bad thing, or it would, you know, these people had problems as a result of it. And what was so delightful and refreshing about Will and Grace is that it was just, they were just normal people.
Mm.
It was, that was never a problem. His gayness, Will's gayness was never an issue. Mm. It was never a problem. He just went about his life as normal. And that completely subverted and changed the public's opinion.
Right.
And he credits that TV show
hmm.
as helping do more for gay rights than anything else.
Jeez.
Yeah, fiction's powerful, dude.
Yeah.
It does things. That's it's a bit cliche. I'm sure I've mentioned this before. But Brokeback Mountain was the film when did that come out? 2006? 2004?
Yeah.
Something like that.
Yeah. So I must have been like 12 or 13.
Yeah.
That was the film that like cured my indoctrinated homophobia. Like 100%. And I was like, oh, gay people from Fall in Love.
Yeah.
I didn't know any gay people in my life.
But still.
Didn't have that reference point because I was so like protected.
But yes. Somewhat of the argument was like, it had to be a secret.
Mm.
It was a problem.
Mm. Oh, yeah. 100%.
It was naughty and bad.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay, it was because they were fucking married. Yes. But like, but still, like, it was still presented in a way that was like, totally. This is a problem.
Mm.
Yeah, or like that was a complaint like for a while about gay movies, is that there's not a lot of gay movies where we're just people.
Yeah. Know? No, and there was one a year ago on the video store where I was like, it was one of these Christmas movies, and it just happened to be about two gay guys.
Right.
And I remember going like, fuck. Cool.
Yeah.
It's not about it's bad that he's gay or it's a secret that he had to reveal to his parents. I forget what it was called.
Yes.
But it was one of those like, let's just make a normal ass Christmas movie with all the like plump, 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 plump music. But it was just two
dudes. It's a genre.
And by the end of it, you're like, you're rooting for them.
Yeah.
And if you can get like the middle America type mindset by the end of the movie to just be rooting for them, then it's like you've won.
Yeah.
Mm.
It's like you want to see it happen. You want to see love.
Mm.
Love is love. Anyways. But yeah, I thought it was interesting. Perception is a very simple and nice TV show.
Okay.
It is smart in some ways, as preposterous as the premise is. But you go with it. It's a nice thing if you're struggling to find something to watch.
Okay.
We call it a fall asleep show in the sense that it doesn't involve you paying attention to every single beat. You can kind of have it in the background and enjoy it. So
okay. It's
worth a watch. Is that it, guys?
Do we want to talk about Oscars more or not? Are we just going to skip the nominations?
Let's unpack them just for a wee little bit.
A wee bit.
Did you watch it?
I watched. It was very nice and quick.
Yeah, it was.
That's
also the name of my sex tape.
Emphasis on nice. But quick. Let's chat about it. Was there anything astounding for you guys out of the announcements?
Fucking 30 nominations for Emilia Perez.
That's insane.
Yeah, a movie that I know very little about.
And I'm kind of like dreading watching it. I'm procrastinating on it because every gay person I've spoken to says it's shit and problematic.
Right.
Yeah. I know nothing about it apart from the fact that...
I know very little about it.
It does... It's a drug dealer wants to trans.
No, he... They go into hiding because, I don't know, this is what I've heard, they go into hiding and to do that they transition. So being trans is a device to escape, but then maybe there's a positive character arc through that or something that's like, oh, this is actually what I want.
Right.
I don't know.
Every year there's one of these movies that somehow do better in the Oscars than they do in sort of the real world.
Yeah, often there's like this early critical reception that's very positive.
Yes.
And then it kind of goes wider and people go, oh, wait, this sucks.
Yeah, and yes. I think it's also worth mentioning that the way in which these films enter the Oscars and how they get nominated is very much similar to politics in the sense that there are Academy members that exist around the world that have the voting ability and you have to campaign your film.
Yeah.
Very much like you have to campaign to win votes in an election in politics. And so you have to throw parties. You have to be the buzz person of the season. You've got to move and conduct yourself in a particular way.
Yeah.
And so sometimes these films get more hype and love and votes than maybe they should. Yeah. I don't know. We'll see.
Yeah, there was a teachable moment for me growing up when I watched what Robin Williams is live on Broadway.
Oh, right.
When one of his jokes, and it was something I'd never thought of critically before as a young, like, I don't know, like starry-eyed movie lover.
Yes.
And in his skit, he goes, "What, you're telling me that the Oscars are political too? Fuck off." And I was kind of like, oh.
Yeah.
Oh, they are political.
Yes.
And then I started to think about it that way. It was around the time of Hurt Locker.
Oh, okay.
That I saw that. And I was like, why isn't Avatar winning? It was like the biggest film ever made.
Right.
And it's amazing. Well, yes. I was young.
Yeah, I'm sure.
And yeah, it's like Green Book. It's like Coda. It's like, but I suppose those aren't, well, Green Book's problematic as fuck. But it's like these films, like, also Crash.
Yes.
Like, fucking problematic movie.
Yeah, the one that everyone comes to was the movie Crash. Yeah. That took home best film in its year. But people felt it didn't deserve that.
Yeah.
It should have gone to many other deserving people.
Yeah.
So, yeah,
it's like
so
a redemption story for a cop that sexually assaults a woman, you know? That's the thing that's iffy about it.
Yeah, shit. But we've got all the sort of right ones in the right categories. I think for me, to some degree, the Wickeds are very much involved in the costumes and the makeup and the styling.
Right.
Same as Nosferatu, as we said.
But it's nominated for editing, Wicked, which is...
Yeah, odd. Which we thought was...
Challengers wasn't.
Yeah.
Yes.
What the fuck? Yeah.
So Challengers was very largely snubbed.
Entirely snubbed. It got no nominations.
It got nothing. Yeah.
Yeah. Why wasn't the Tennis Ball nominated for Best Cinematography?
Right.
Sorry.
Yeah. Villeneuve for Dune Part 2 didn't get much.
Yeah.
So that was
a deserved directing nom.
Yeah.
100%.
Oh, so it'll be interesting, man.
Yeah,
but
we need to watch the Brutalist.
Yes.
Yeah, so Brutalist is coming to cinemas,
nice.
And tickets are on sale for some screenings at the Bioscope. Cool. It's the weekend of the 6th of Feb, so it's in about 2 weeks' time. It is a particularly long movie, but we have said in our description at the Bioscope, please don't be put off by this running time. There is an intermission.
Okay.
Nice.
That
well
is
done.
Built into this time. There is a 15-minute intermission with a countdown clock. But the total running time is 3.5 hours.
Yeah.
But apparently it's incredible.
Yeah.
So, and gripping, and the time flies, so don't be put off. But it is one of those other movies that is also getting a lot of attention and a lot of awards, and is very largely not being seen.
Yeah.
Probably because of it is a World War II 3.5 hour movie.
Yeah.
So it's not appealing.
Yeah, we've had a lot of those. I think we're also like globally getting tired of that.
Yeah.
You know?
But it is out there as one of them. A complete unknown is getting a lot.
Sing Sing.
Sing Sing is in there.
It didn't get much.
It didn't get much, but
Coleman Domingo, man.
If I was a voting member of the Academy, I would vote for Coleman Domingo in Best Lead Actor.
Yeah.
I think he is 100%. Very deserving of that. But politically, could go to Chalamet.
No, I doubt it.
Yeah, I'm kind of assuming it'll be Adrian Brody.
Oh, yeah. No,
just because a lot of the times the Golden Globes are kind of the like litmus test.
Yes.
And he got the Golden Globe, so.
Yeah.
And also the big one is the SAG Awards, Screen Actors Guild, for that category.
Yeah.
It's like also a pretty good indication. If there's a stack of Golden Globe and SAG, then you pretty much are certain that that person's going to get the Oscar nomination, you know?
Interesting.
But then also that Terrence Macklin, how did I remember that guy's name? Not nominated for Best Supporting Actor, the guy who did the Hamlet soliloquy in Sing Sing.
Yeah.
Clarence Macklin, I think.
Oh, okay.
I think it's Clarence. Mm. But yeah, he was incredible.
Yeah. Just like also a bit should've of a
gotten,
snub there.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, but Challengers was great and should have gotten more.
Yeah. Well, should have gotten anything.
Yeah.
A lot of people said Best Score.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The music was a jam.
Absolutely.
It won the Golden Globe. For the score, I think.
Shit.
Yeah,
didn't
so you
get nominated for an
be...
Oscar.
Yeah, shit.
Yeah. But I hope Better Man gets Best VFX. I actually think it deserves it.
Yes.
Yes.
I think it's like the most, like, in terms of like the film, it's kind of the most critical use of VFX in a movie since like Avatar, maybe. Like, this movie couldn't exist without the visual effects.
Yes.
Right. Like, there's so many movies that you could still make in some way or another without them.
Yeah.
Right. This has to have visual effects.
Yes. Yeah, because I think, you know, a movie like Wicked, don't get confused, a lot of that was very practical.
Yeah. Even though it doesn't look it looks like smeary CGI all the time, even though they had a lot of sets.
Yeah.
Because it's badly shot.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah.
Magic, guys. Is that everything?
I think so.
Should we lock up? Should we go home?
Yeah, let's do it, guys.
Okay, magic. We've got a nice week coming up.
Mm.
And as I said in the beginning, we've got our screening on Wednesday. So for those who can join us to watch a little David Lynch, it'd be lovely to see you there. Otherwise, yeah, there's a lot of preview stuff this week. Mm. And so I'm excited to go and see that, which we'll all talk about next week. But magic, thank you, guys. Yes. Thank you for listening. Our home base is thevideostore.co.za, where you can see previous episodes as well as our links to home, you know, to the social media. So please chime in. You can also, as we said, you can return something. So on our Facebook group or in the comments on Instagram, please let us know what you've been watching and enjoying so we can have ourselves a fat chat about that.
Yeah.
As you can tell, we love talking about film and TV. So let's have a little discussion over there.
Yeah.
Little chin wag or whatever the thumb tickle or thumb tap. Little thumb tap about it. Magic. Cool, guys. See you soon.
Bye-bye.
Cheers.